I don't know what the future of this farm is. I really don't. It's a business with a very thin margin, and it's getting thinner. It took a lot of sacrifice. Those are days and days of no sleep and lots of blood, sweat, and tears. When they say that, that's not just to say. That's really what you're giving to build something like a farm.
This is the Real Food, Real People podcast.
Some people say that it can't be done, but our guest today has done it. A first generation family dairy farm here in Elma, Washington, where we visit with Nora Dolman. She and her husband, Nick, and their family farm 400 cows growing milk for Dairy Gold here in Western Washington. It's a huge challenge, and she shows us how it's done and all of the heart that's gone into it. I'm Dylan Honkoop. This is the Real Food, Real People podcast. We're glad you're here for another episode, and get ready to get to know Nora Dolman and everything that goes in to this dairy farm here in Elma, Washington. So Nora.
Yes.
Thanks for having me to the farm.
Absolutely. Welcome.
So this is it. Nick and Nora's dairy.
Yes. It's the dairy.
Like, what is the official name of your dairy?
It's Elma Dairy.
Elma Dairy.
Yep.
Here in Elma, Washington, which makes sense. But I know you as Nick and Nora's crazy adventure. Well, not really, but that's the name on, I know you from on Instagram.
Yep, that's right. Well, Nick and Nora just sounds smooth. There's a old classic movie.
Yep, exactly.
Nick and Nora, the Thin Man. So, we figured that would be a great Instagram handle, I guess.
So we're watching milk being grown right now, right behind us here, right?
That's right.
Cows eating the feed. Now, talk about what's happening here. What are they eating?
Our cows are eating a mixed ration. They've got some grass silage. We put a little alfalfa in that.
Now, do you guys grow it? You grow your cow food here?
Yes, we grow our own grass silage here. We also make hay and round bales.
So, and your crop farmers then as well as cow farmers?
Thankfully, yes. That's one of my favorite things about farming is growing the crops for the cows.
So talk about how that works. Obviously, this is not crop farming season where we're talking right now.
Yeah, unfortunately not. So probably in April, we'll be out cutting the grass, bringing it in and storing it in the silage pits, letting that grass in silo a little bit. It gives it a nice, it breaks it down kind of, I consider it like a fermentation, kind of like us eating yogurt. So the girls will get a little bit of more nutrient from that grass.
It's easier to break down. Cow sauerkraut.
Cow sauerkraut. I make sauerkraut too, and I love it. Yes.
Me too.
At any rate, so yes, we're packing the silage into the pit, and we do that all through May till November. In the drier months, we'll make some hay, do some square bales and some round bales that we feed our not milking animals, the beef and the younger stock. And
So what kind of stuff come crop farming season, since I can tell that you love that part of it? And that's honestly my part too, because I'm a lot of dairy farmers are real animal people. And I always have to confess, I'm not a huge animal person. I think they're cool, but
they're fantastic.
I don't have, they take a lot of patience and calm to work with. And I struggle with that. But I do love the crop farming. That's what I grew up around on a raspberry farm.
Oh, cool.
So what do you do then yourself come crop time? What's your role? Do you turn the dirt? Do you run the mower? Do you run the what's your thing to do?
So we farm in a floodplain, so there's not a whole lot of turning dirt for us. We keep a good perennial stand of grass.
Is that like erosion and stuff?
Yes, to prevent erosion. We don't want the neighbors down the river getting all our dirt, so we like to keep it on the farm. So we'll have a good stand of grass, and then we'll interseed with different things that we had. Lately, we've been putting oats into the ground, and also like clover. So oats and clover really flex in the hot, dry season, August.
So they're more drought resistant, or what's the purpose for those?
Yes, they're more drought resistant, and it adds nutrient for the cows, also volume.
Yeah.
For our, you know, forage, our take home.
Yeah. What about soil health? I've heard of clover and oats and stuff being used also to improve soil health. Is that part of the whole thing?
Yeah, I think so. Yep.
So it's like diverse crops, not just the same one variety of grass everywhere.
There you go. Yep.
Sort of thing.
Yep. So we chop the grass, we'll mow it, rake it, chop it. And then once we're done with the field, we'll let, well, in the drier season, not the first cutting, but probably second cutting, we'll allow the cows to go out after we've chopped. They'll cut, they'll trim the edges around the fence line
and graze it down.
Yeah, graze it down, aerate the soil a little bit, and then they'll move on. We'll have them in there for maybe a week, kind of depending. We'll watch the grass, and then we'll move them on to the next field, and we apply our manure, we'll let that settle in. Grass grows up again, and we do it all over again.
Natural fertilizer, and the cycle continues.
And the cycle continues.
Cows eat it, they poop it out, you put it on the field.
Yes.
It grows grass.
Wonderful cycle of life.
One of the cycles of life. Thinking about that, why don't you have the cows out there more to roam around, and just, why do you have to mow it? You know, to cut the grass down, chop it up into chunks, put it in a pit and ensile it, make cow sauerkraut. Why don't you just have the cows out walking around grazing?
Well, we can't have them out 12 months out of the year. And they would do a number. They'd do some damage on that soil, on that that grass, that root system that we have. So they're up in the barns making the milk. We bring them the feed. But also in the nice months, in the optimal months, we'll have the cows out chasing the chopper, chasing the harvest crew.
So they do pasture some.
Mm-hmm.
How much of the year are they able to do that?
May till, we were out till November this year. Yeah.
Depending on the weather kind of thing.
Yeah, we had a really dry spring last year. So, but yeah, about that. And depending on the fields.
So what does it take to grow good milk? I mean, you gotta really be worried about the specifics of that grass and, you know, I know there's lots of testing that can go on sometimes to see like what's in it nutrient-wise. Just kind of like reading the nutrient label on your cereal box in the morning.
Right, absolutely. Definitely the age of the grass and of course what nutrients you're feeding the grass. These girls will turn their nose up at old mature grass. There's just fiber in it. They want the good stuff. They want
the
young, yes, the young green lush stuff. So yeah, absolutely the science of it.
So I see a lot of black and white cows, and that would be Holsteins.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But you do have a few others in there. I see some brown and white, and that's, a lot of people think of brown cows and Jerseys, but those aren't Jerseys. Those, what do we have, Guernseys in here?
No Guernseys.
Or what are they?
We have a whole variety. So we started our herd with Holsteins.
Uh-huh.
And then we bought some Jerseys, really loved them, but bred them to Holstein.
Okay.
And then my husband got all excited about Hybrid Vigor. We want a healthy cow. And when you're mixing all of the good traits from one breed and another breed, and you get them all in one calf, and then you can continue that line, it's really exciting. But then he got bored with just Holstein and Jersey. So didn't get so bored that he got to Guernsey.
Yeah.
So we've got some Montbilliard. We've got Fleckvieh, and we have some Swiss because the kids showed Swiss. Not a lot of those. A lot of red carriers when we started choosing semen for polled. So we don't want horns. We don't have to deal with that when they grow up or even when they're calves. And if you've got to try to contend with horns. So he's been choosing a lot of polled semen, which means that, we wind up with a lot of red Holstein, interestingly enough.
So you talk about the different characteristics. Kind of generally, what are those that you're looking for in a good cow to grow milk?
Yeah, we want her to be healthy. We want her to have a good, strong immune system. We like a lot of cream. We don't need a ton of milk, but we want to have good quality milk, and we want her to live a long, healthy life. We want her to have easy calving. So those are traits that you can pick out from your selection of sires. And also the polled.
So overall, you guys are more like quality versus quantity.
Yes,
here.
Quality, cream, healthy, yeah.
So where does your milk go to then? Like, how would I end up drinking or eating something made out of your milk?
Yeah, we're Dairy Gold shippers, so you can mm-hmm. find our milk in every local store in Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana.
Do you know if your milk goes to the fluid milk or which? Because they have different facilities around Washington State that make different things out of milk from different farms.
Yeah.
Do you know much about where it goes, or it kind of depends on where they need it?
I think it kind of depends on where they need it. I'm assuming most of ours goes to powder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is the case up by us, too, because mm-hmm. we have a really big powdered milk plant mm-hmm. in Linden, where I grew up.
Okay.
So that's very much what I'm familiar with. Obviously, though, like when you produce milk, and you guys being about quality rather than quantity, they test the loads, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just milk is milk. Every load probably has a different test as far as the components of the milk, right?
Yes.
What are those? Like milk fat is a big thing?
Yes.
Like how creamy it is, basically.
Yeah,
right?
4.2 is what we're running right now.
It's interesting.
That's butter fat.
So that's, if you think about it, you go to the store and you get whole milk, but it's like 3.5% or something. Yours is actually
yeah.
creamier than whole milk when
yeah.
it's produced.
That's reduced fat, your whole
yeah.
milk.
Yeah, exactly. So day to day, what is your role on the farm? Are you're out here dressed to be out with the cows? What do you do?
So in the wintertime, unfortunately, there's no silage season, you know, there's no harvesting to do.
Yep.
So this is kind of my baby, the Lely pen. This is our newest project. Mm. It's 130 cows in this pen, mostly first lactation. So I'll come in and I'll fetch the girls that haven't been into the robot when they need to be. Go to the computer, pull a list. They'll be kind of depending on where they are in their lactation, they could be 6 hours out if they're fresh or 12 hours out. So bring them up, get them into the robot, remind them what they need to be doing. Also do just kind of light cow care. I'm not a cow person. I'm a tractor person.
Yeah.
So, you know, if she
looks...
I feel
you on that. Yeah,
all right.
Totally.
And, you know, if her foot looks funky or... Yeah, also, the computer or the robots will read certain things from their milk, like temperature and other things, so I can pull that up.
Yeah, in terms of the robots, I remember when I first heard, oh, they're going to milk cows with robots, and this is years ago. I'm thinking, when I think of a robot, I think of like C-3PO or,
yes.
you know, something that moves around, but this is stationary, and they walk into it, right? Explain
yes.
how the robot works.
Unfortunately, it does not do the robot in the barn. It is yeah. stationary.
Yeah.
I could do that when I'm pushing the girls up.
But you're not a robot.
Unfortunately, yeah. So explain how it works. Yes, it's a room. There's access for the cows to go in. We have two robots and one pen here. The cows walk in. The gate will close. It'll read her tag. It pulls up her information. It remembers the mapping of her udder, where her teats are, and then arm comes in, pulls up the memory, but also reads with a laser where her teats are, cleans them, brushes them off, blows them dry. Yeah, we got a whole spa thing going on, and then comes in and attaches and starts milking her. And
just with machines that use suction, I guess, for people who aren't familiar with milking
yeah.
machines.
Yes.
They just have what, little inflation kind of things that
yes.
suck onto the teats and draw the milk out?
That sounds good. Yep.
And the cows, the cows are cool with that? They just...
Oh, that's the other thing. So she's incentivized with grain.
Okay.
So
they're
robot
like, hey,
also...
we're going to go get a snack.
Yes.
And while they're munching on their snack...
Yes.
Obviously, it can't be that uncomfortable, though, if
oh.
they're just chilling there while this machine is taking
yeah.
care of it.
Yeah, sometimes you got to make them leave. And they're so curious too. My husband's convinced that robots were made for jerseys. Curious, you know, cows that just want to get into everything new and novel. So yeah, they come in, they're eating their grain, licking the bowl clean. She gets milked. And the robot's taking all that information in, how much per quarter that she's getting milked, what's the temperature, what's that milk look like, and then it gets pumped out to a buffer tank and then into the tank up front for the truck to pick up a little bit later. So, and we do it all over again.
Crazy. How often does a cow go through this robot to be milked?
Our average is 2.7 right now.
Like 2.7 times a day?
Yes, yes.
Interesting.
But we have a few that are in there like five times. And so the robot sees her, you know.
They just like it more because what? They want another snack?
Because they're jerseys. Because they're curious. They want another snack.
Do they get a snack if they go in every time?
If it's too often, the robot will kick her out and won't allow her to get that extra little snack.
You're like, but, no, you've had enough.
Yeah. But if it's decided, you know, it's looking back at her you know, activity and says, well, maybe she's got 10 more pounds or something. The robot will allow her to get milked and she gets a little bit more snack.
When did you guys start doing this with this technology?
We started up our robots in 2020. Yeah. And which was great timing because the kids came home for COVID shut down the schools. So we had the kids full time to run the cows to the robots and
homeschool on the farm with cows.
Oh yeah. We did a lot of homeschool projects that looked like construction and farming.
What was it like making that shift though? I know that can be a big deal for farms when they go from the old style where you have a person or multiple people who are working with the cows, actually putting the milking machines on and doing all of that to a robot system. It can be a huge change for how a farm works.
Yeah, we cheated for a little while because we continued with our conventional parlor. We ran most of the cows through there and then we had two pens of cows into the robots. It was really exciting. I think Nick and I both have a mechanical background. So my husband Nick is an absolute cow guy, born and raised in dairy farming. But to add the robot piece to it was really exciting. It's like two things that he's really, you know, really enjoys. To be able to put that together was kind of neat. So
automation, like why not just have people do it? I guess is one question somebody could ask.
Well, in Washington State, it's really, really expensive to have, labor is super expensive. So that was a big drive for robots. Also cow comfort. Cows love the robots and we really love the idea that they can come in when they please. And not that the conventional way of milking is not a bad way. This was just kind of a, you know, this is right up our alley with technology and mechanics. And so, yeah, we went for it.
Automation. Is that the way of farming? I mean, eventually a robot go out and cut the grass and make the silage?
I hope not.
The cow sauerkraut?
I certainly hope not.
Yeah.
I don't want to lose that part.
Because you like that part. That's your favorite part.
I will not be replaced, by the way, by a robot.
What's your perfect day on the dairy? Out in the tractor, bringing in the harvest?
Silage season, absolutely. Yep. A warm, sunny day. Yeah, perfect day is bringing in grass, about 60 loads. And then doing some cow care in the morning, checking on the robot girls, and then out to the tractors and just spending the day in the fields. That's a perfect day.
Love driving tractor.
Yep, absolutely.
Me too. I miss that now that I'm not a farmer.
I'm sure somebody's hiring.
And I do pick up odd jobs when I get the chance. Be like, oh, I can come drive a tractor for a few hours. Therapy for me to just sit in the tractor and get stuff done and turn the radio up, that kind of thing.
Yep.
But automation being a big thing, this is, I guess you would call this a robot that's scraping the manure.
Yeah, so this was a huge thing for us, automating the manure scraping, because like you said, otherwise you'd have somebody driving up and down the barns all day long, all of the barns, moving cows from one end of the barn to the other, out of the way so you can push that manure down into the scrape slot. Now we have automatic scrapers. These run 4 times a day. It's a system that has 4 alleys. So 2 are coming down while 2 are going up and vice versa. We also have a flush system. So the manure that comes down into the scrape slot goes into the back of the farm. It's separated from the liquids to the solids. Mm. And that liquid is then pumped up to a tank up above our barns, our other flush barns. And then there's automation of some bladder valves that will open to flush the barns with liquid manure.
But so that's recycled water then?
It's recycled liquid manure. Yep. Yes, absolutely.
And then ultimately, that manure becomes your fertilizer for your crops.
That's right. That liquid gold.
So what do you do with it in the wintertime? Like, it's being pushed here into a slot, down into a system, like you say, separated probably over there is what I'm seeing, where it's taking the solid parts out and separating it from the liquid. Then you've got to store it, right?
Yes, we do. Yeah, we've got lagoons that store our manure, and then in the silage harvest season, we'll start pumping it out onto the fields to grow that grass for the girls.
You get to do that part too, the manure pumping?
Yes, I get to do that. Okay, we were all talking about how fun tractors are, but are they really fun at 0.5 miles an hour?
Yeah.
No,
very
not so
slow
much.
to spread the manure out.
Yeah.
But that's so important. I mean, like, you
important.
Talk about soil health, right?
Like, oh,
that's a huge part of it.
Doing God's work. I know, right? It's all worth it. Just put on a podcast.
We're all in favor of that here.
Right, yeah.
Keep the podcasts on. Oh, and you said you have 600 acres of crop farming. And so is that what it takes to feed this many cows, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, we pick up extra acreage here and there. The last 3 years have been really dry. We've had super dry falls even that have been pretty rough on harvest. So lately we've been purchasing hay. So if we run short, we got to buy some hay from the east side of the mountains usually.
That's probably more expensive than just growing it yourself.
Yep.
Fun.
Yeah. Why not? Farming costs money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a quick time out from our conversation here to thank our sponsors on the Real Food, Real People podcast. These folks make these conversations, this podcast possible. So first, the Dairy Farmers of Washington, big supporters of this podcast and supporters of farms like Nora's here in Elma, Washington, where they do all the things that Dairy Farmers of Washington talk about all the time. WaDairy.org. There are lots of other stories like Nick and Nora Dolman's about producing milk here in Washington State, taking care of cows, stewarding the land. That's what they're all about. Farming dairies in Washington, Dairy Farmers of Washington, WaDairy.org is the website. Check it out. Also, Washington Red Raspberries, supporting the podcast. A big thank you to them, as well as CHS Northwest, helping farms like this do what they do, and also providing a lot of other things to the public with their retail outlets, their fuel, as well as the agronomy and all the different things that CHS Northwest provides. So thank you to those sponsors. Now let's get back to our conversation with Nora Dolman here in Elma. So tell me, how did you come to this world? And this is gorgeous, by the way, out here. All the green, all these, fields that you've been talking about where the grass grows. Mm-hmm. Like, natural way to grow milk, which starts here in the field, right? But how did you get started in this? Did you grow up around farming? You said your husband did.
Yes. I absolutely did not grow up in farming. Mm. I think my earliest and very minimal experience in farming was a garden. Grew snap peas. Yeah. And I was so proud of myself. I think I was 2nd grade. Sold them to the restaurant that my mom used to work at.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's not legit farming, right? So, married into dairy. My husband's family, dairy farm. So, we kind of got into that.
That so did you grow up in this area?
Grew up in Washington State, yep.
In Washington State.
From Spokane, okay. But spent most childhood in Olympia area, southwest okay. Washington.
So not far from here.
Nope.
But I guess the reason I ask is you grew up with all of this around. How much of it were you aware of before you connected with your husband's family and kind of got into the actual farming?
Absolutely none of it. I had no idea. I don't think I ever thought about where milk comes from or, you know, mm-hmm. what it takes to make that milk or yeah. cheese or any other product. So totally clueless.
How did you and your husband meet?
We met at Diesel School, Centralia College. We okay. both went. Yeah.
So you were, yeah, what were you planning to do? You were going to be a diesel mechanic?
Yep, that's what I wanted to really? Do.
Tell me about that. That's that's cool.
I love mechanicking. And so in high school, I started taking shop classes. Really mm-hmm. loved that. Took some welding classes and decided to do diesel. I think, not really sure why, cars, I saw cars are getting a little smaller and yeah. A lot of the parts on them are super consumable, just, you right. know, throwaway. Cars are becoming throwaway parts.
Disposable.
And, yeah, very disposable, yeah.
But diesels, big trucks, tractors, stuff like that. So at that point, you had to have been thinking about tractors a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, worked in a truck shop. Mm-hmm.
And you got drawn into the farming world. What was that like at first being around farming? It was probably kind of like, whoa, this is what you guys do?
Yeah, learned a little bit when we were first dating and first married, but yep. we didn't get into dairy farming right away.
How did you start farming? What were you doing at first when you guys were first together?
Nick and I started dairying in 2008. I remember I was 9 months pregnant when we started, a little bit checked out, not super involved in the dairy at that time.
Yeah.
But what a wonderful way to raise kids.
Yeah.
They've got all this land at their disposal. They go out and ride four-wheelers and dirt bikes and things like that. And of course, if you can ride a four-wheeler, you can drive a tractor. So they get put to work.
Yeah.
And they're on the harvest crew for sure. But yeah, no, I learned along with my kids a lot about dairy. I don't know everything by any means.
So in 2008, you guys decided you wanted to go all in on this farming. Had you been doing some farming stuff just before that, or what were you doing professionally before farming?
So
you're probably busy having kids.
Yeah,
too,
we were having kids. We had a mobile repair service.
Okay.
Doing the mechanical, and Nick was doing all the mechanical work. I'm yeah. raising kids, doing the books. And then we decided, so at one point I was on the harvest crew for my father-in-law. Mm-hmm. So driving tractor, learned a lot there. And then, yeah, 2008, we started milking our own cows. We decided to get into it.
So is this the family farm that you're continuing on, or is this a different farm that you guys...
No, this is not the family farm.
Okay.
Yep. Nick was raised on a dairy 30 minutes from here.
Okay.
And his parents still farm there. But this was a totally different one owned by somebody else, and we had the opportunity to get into it and decided to take that chance.
So they were selling out. It was time for them to call it quits.
And yep.
What did that feel like? That had to have been... To me, that sounds really daunting.
Yeah.
To take on a project, if you will, and a project doesn't, as a term, doesn't do it justice. A farm is much more than a project. It's a million projects. How did you had to have been thinking, like, what are we doing here?
A little bit, yeah. Man, thinking back now, I knew absolutely nothing. Yeah. I knew absolutely nothing about the cows and the business side. There's a huge part of it is the business side. Of course, thankfully, Nick had all of that experience to lean into. And we just took a chance. Why not? I guess it was an adventure.
Yeah.
And it's
Nick and Nora's adventure.
Nick and Nora's adventure.
So how did it go at first? Like, when did you finally find your groove? Because, I mean, it probably takes at least a couple of years to kind of get into the routines and patterns that a place like this takes.
Yeah, okay. So when we started with a couple hundred cows, and we built up to about 1,400. And we were making a lot of milk. And that was how we were able to pay off debt that it took to get into the dairy industry. Yeah. And but it's a challenge. It's a challenge, especially on the west side and of the state.
Yeah.
When, you know, your neighbors aren't farmers. They're building houses all up and down the highway from you. So, you know, your field access or opportunities are limited, more and more so.
Yeah.
As your lovely neighbors come in. And then I guess we just decided to change the way we were doing things. And so we sold a bunch of cows, and now we're just doing automation with milking robots, 400 cows.
Yeah.
And it's a little quieter. Yeah. But.
And is that when you kind of decided to go, like we talked about earlier, quality over quantity sort of approach?
Well, I'd like to say that the milk has always been quality.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I suppose so, yeah. You know, you're feeling the squeeze from all angles, whether it's the neighbors moving in or the cost of everything. We figured it would just be a better fit if we got a little smaller.
So how much different is your life now compared to before farming? Is that worth it?
Yes, of course it's worth it. Farming is, for me, I get to do all the cool stuff. You know, I get to play with cows, and I get to, you know, mess with the robots. I get to be outside a lot. Although, you know, 14 degree weather and the blowing wind is not all that fun, but I love to be able to work outside and, you know, do all the things that we do.
What's it like to be a woman doing what you're doing as well? Because I know there's a stereotype of just like, oh, farm wife or whatever. You're farming just as much as anybody on this farm.
So, yeah, I don't know. I guess that I would say, first off, the stereotype is total baloney. Yep. I've met a lot of women in the dairy industry and agriculture, and all of us are so different, and we have so many different skills and passions that are plugged into agriculture, and we, I don't know, it's, there can't be a stereotype because we're all our unique selves. And how is it for me? I don't know. I don't know any different, I suppose. Yeah. Nobody told me I wasn't supposed to, so I just did it.
Well, and going into like being a diesel mechanic out of high school is not your stereotypical role either. So you're probably used to it from the get-go of doing something that's unexpected maybe to what people have in their heads.
I suppose so, yes.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't, like I said, I didn't know any better. I was never told I wasn't supposed to be doing those sorts of things.
I love it. So what does the future hold for this farm? You've got kids that are growing up now. They want to get into it, or what's the trajectory?
Oh, I don't know what the future of this farm is. I really don't. You know, again, it's a business with a very thin margin, and it's getting thinner. So I don't know. I honestly don't see farming thriving in my area for too much longer. I don't see the future for my kids here, unfortunately. But you know, am I guaranteed that? No. You know, I'm not a multi-generation farm with land that's been passed down for forever. So, you know, practically speaking, what do we deserve? I don't know. We deserve a good, hard day's work.
Yeah.
Hopefully to, you know, build something for our kids. But what that looks like, I don't know.
Well, and you guys prove that it's possible, too, because for some people it feels or seems or is legitimately too daunting for them to maybe get into farming the way that you guys did.
Yeah.
But you made it happen. And again, not like, oh, hey, family money passed down. You did did the whole bootstrap thing, right?
We certainly did. And those, it took a lot of sacrifice. Those are days and days of no sleep and lots of blood, sweat, and tears. When they say that, that's not just a say. That's really what you're giving to build something like a farm.
When you say you just don't know what the future is and you don't know about farming in this region, why? What's driving that? What's the biggest problem?
Well, labor costs and honestly, legislative sessions. It's exhausting going from one session to the other when you hear big, scary buffer bills coming in. I mean, that's something that would take all of this land that we make our feed for our girls. It would take everything. The cost of everything, which is affected by regulations and labor. You look over to the state right next to us and, you know, the cost of labor is half. Their fuel cost is, you know, a fraction of what we pay. And everything on the farm takes fuel in one way or another. I got to feed the cows. Well, that's going to take some diesel. I got to make the feed for the cows. That's going to take the diesel. I've got to do something with my manure. That's going to take the diesel. So, it's a high cost of doing business in this state.
And that's the reality of where our food comes from then, too. It costs that much more money to produce the food that we all go to the store and eat. Yeah. What I've been hearing, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but what the farmer gets for the food that they grow isn't really going up.
No, that ain't changing. That's
for sure. So that's down here, but the cost of producing it keeps going up.
Yep.
What do you do? How are you guys dealing with that?
We pay ourselves a little less every year. And we try to cut where we can. But, you know, when you're continuing on that pattern. Yeah. What is the future? I don't know.
That's scary.
Yeah. It's a little scary, but that's life. Life is scary.
So if you didn't have this farm, what would you do?
Oh, I can't imagine not making food, right? I would love to stay in agriculture. But I've also lived in Washington State all my life and I love where I live. I love where I'm from. So I don't know. That's my problem.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me out here to the farm. And good luck. I hope that things change because, and I think a lot of people would agree, what you guys are doing to grow food and the way that you're doing it is what we need. And I don't want to see farms like yours go away. So that's hard to hear. But it's good to hear, at least for people to be aware of what's happening. So thank you for sharing that. And thanks for having me here to the farm.
Thank you.
This is the Real Food, Real People podcast. These are the stories of the people who grow your food.